Hello, and welcome to the second installment, though the third part, to our commentary series. Today we are going to be discussing episode 2, Psychedelics and Our Subjective Reality. This is where Andrew has his first psychedelic trip, or not during the episode, before. This is the episode that happened after his psychedelic trip. So this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm curious to get into this conversation.
Oh, I'm very excited because I can still feel like I think it was that one that it hit me just like, oh, everything just is. And that was like the thing that kept running through. I'm curious if I do bring it up. Maybe it was a different one. But yeah, this is the first trip post trip report. And yeah, so I'm very excited. So I'll shut the fuck up now so we can start the video.
Oh, and let's not forget that this was the birth of our intro, because after I fucked up the first one, you decided to take over. You're like, let me do this. I'm like, thank you so much.
With Andrew and Ray, I'm Andrew.
And that would make me Ray.
Thank you so much for joining. If you're on YouTube, feel free to hit that subscribe button. If you haven't touched it yet, it takes about 2 seconds, and I don't think you'll want to miss some of our upcoming episodes. I don't think you'll ever want to miss an episode, but you know, that's my unbiased opinion.
Oh, it feels like forever between recording these episodes. It's like we cover so much ground in a single hour or in the 2 hours after the episode. And then there's a week of just watching it all play out. Like the insights that we've talked about, it's like, oh, there it is. And there it is. And oh, that's happening there. And so it's so much fun. But by the time I get to about Thursday, I'm just itching to have another conversation, because so much has happened in that span of non-time. So it's going to get to the point where we're going to start doing two of these a week at some point, I think.
I think we'll have to. It's felt like it's been a month since Monday. I don't know if it was, you know, taking some mushrooms for the first time ever caused that. I certainly felt like time slowed down a bit. Like I was sort of like taking notes on my phone as I just like keep track of like when I started feeling stuff, just because I like doing that stuff. And I knew I was going to probably make a video about my experience. So having that I know a lot of people that I think would have a great time with them, and not just a great time, but like it could be super incredibly beneficial to them and their lives, even doing something like microdosing, which is, I don't know, it's such a bummer that it's been so stigmatized.
Yeah, so this was like, I think it's important to keep in mind, like before this week, I was starting to come to the realization that mushrooms weren't a bad thing, but it wasn't until I tried them that I was like, oh my God, these are illegal? Like, what the hell is going on? So this is like super fresh for me that like, holy fuck, mushrooms aren't the equivalent of black tar heroin, like I thought for most of my life. Like, holy fucking shit. So this is like super fresh. So I fucking love that we have the documentation of these things. Like, it's pretty cool that this happened when it did and started when it did. And it's kind of like, yeah, anyway.
I'm excited to see where this conversation goes. It's been forever. I've never revisited this episode. So,
but yeah, it was really cool. And this week, yeah, it just felt like it was 30 days, not 7. So I'm with you on, I think we may be forced into doing two of these a week.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny. I just want to comment how funny that is too. Somebody asked me on my TikTok, because I talk about this all the time, obviously. And despite having another job in an industry that has nothing to do with this conversation, or at least only on a periphery, it's, you know, well, is this what you want to do? And I've went back and forth with that for 20 years. I've went back and forth. It's like, you know, do I want to just apply this and enjoy my life? Or do I want to be out there talking to people, watching them have those aha moments that drive me? And the answer is, I just keep getting drawn back to this. Regardless of what direction I choose, regardless of what I get into, if I decide, oh, I'm going to learn this now, or I'm going to take up this hobby, it always ends up coming back to this. When I got into Kung Fu, my Sifu used to find it hilarious because I would come in to train, but I was also training how I thought. So he would actually tell the other students, like, listen to Ray. He has a very slow mind. And at first I'm like, hey, hold on a minute. What does that mean? But what he meant was that he explains it to me once, and then I take it in and I chew on it and I really do what I can with what I can comprehend in what was said, rather than just waiting for the next tidbit. And so, yeah, everything always comes back to these lessons for me. And so making two podcasts a week just seems almost like an inevitability, like we're being sucked into a black hole where it's like, you're going to have this talk because a lot of people want to have this talk.
I think it's really interesting too, just with that, like the discussion of Kung Fu, Wing Chun, and like, I'm going to start getting into it when I move into my new apartment pretty soon here, and just how almost like, and even just like fucking, even the timing of the commentary series, like how it's been, yeah, you could say like, oh, approximately 2 years, but it's also just, I don't know, like the cycles of everything and how lack of a disconnect there is to like everything is kind of cool. Cause it's like, you start to notice yourself being symbolic and then people around you being symbolic of shifts. And you're like, wait, I'm feeling, you're feeling more of that. And so anyway.
And they have, a lot of people have responded this week that they've enjoyed our podcast. I'm really looking forward to more of the feedback that we're going to get.
Definitely. And I don't think there's ever going to be any shortage of things to talk about. Like last episode, we named it Scratching the Surface. And I think towards the end of the episode, I was like, yeah, it's, you know, we definitely covered a lot, but like I could think of off the top of my head, like 100 other things we could touch on. You're like, I love to hear that you think that this is scratching the surface, because we just got into some serious stuff really quickly and a lot of different things. And it's just, I'm so fucking grateful that I have these opportunities to like talk about this stuff, because it really is what I enjoy doing. Like it's the TikTok stuff, the social media stuff. It's never, ever felt like work to me in the past year. Mm. And it's just, I love it. I love interacting with people. The video I posted, just saying like, I basically started out with, so I did a bunch of mushrooms this weekend and then talked about some things that I, you know, had a lot of sort of realizations that I have had in the past many times, but it was just more intense. Mm. And it's kind of like really stuck with me. But on that post, I think it was probably like 10 or 15 people who I mutually follow on TikTok, and I don't follow that many people. And there were a lot just, you know, commenting like, love to see it, blah, 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 knew you'd love it. Like, you know, which a lot of them have probably, you know, they're in similar types of discussions as us. I'm sure a lot of them have, you know, tried them out. And so it was just cool to see, and just being able to interact with so many people and connect with so many different people, not the least of which has been you, of course. So yeah, it's awesome.
It's we are at the moment, our conversation around natural drugs, because we'll stick it to that, because synthetics are something else entirely, man-made and altered drugs are something else. But our conversation around hallucinogens especially is fairly immature in our culture, despite the fact that hallucinogens have been a cornerstone of the growth of our culture for thousands of years. I mean, tribal society regularly used hallucinogens in different types and kinds all over the world, whether it be ayahuasca or peyote or psilocybin mushrooms. They always used those in order to establish balance, or rather for their elders to find some degree of clarity, oddly enough, so they could guide the tribe or guide their culture in a way that was more imbalanced, that wasn't going to have the same consequences. And it's the same thing that happens to us individually. All of a sudden, it's like, it's still us. I think that's the thing that a lot of people get afraid of when they talk about psychedelics. It's like, oh God, I'm going to be a different person. No, it's still you. It's just you in a different conscious environment. All of a sudden, the reality you're experiencing has changed, and everything that you're experiencing within it is unfamiliar to you. And so you're still the same. And that's the lesson in that experience, is that you can be completely uncertain. And so long as you can relax into yourself, you're going to be just fine. And that's the psychedelic lesson in a nutshell.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's I've just on that statement there, just like a bunch of thoughts, because I've had people, you know, obviously I posted on my social media that I tried some drugs, and there's a lot of people who are not familiar with, I had a lot of decent, not a ton, but you know, a decent amount of people closer to me, I'll leave it at that, saying like, hey man, just be careful, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you've definitely never tried mushrooms, because you just have an idea of what they are and you've never actually experienced them. Because this,
I just want to say quick how much I appreciate my lack of regard for people's stigmas about certain things. Like, I kind of forget how, like, the beauty in the lack of, you know, not even like a lack of awareness, but like a lack of concern for what buttons this may press for people, and how deep that stigma runs and how deep it goes. And I was just like, not much has changed in a lot of ways, but like, I forget that I was doing that shit like 2 years ago. Also, almost with less, like there's less, I think, I don't know if it's less sensitivity or just less considerations being taken in, but it's still being myself, like expressing it, because it is absurd and I am realizing that. But I just, I appreciate how little regard I have for people's, you know, triggers and shit when it comes to psychedelics and whatnot.
Well, because I mean, at this point, especially coming out of your first experience, you're looking at it going, the fuck is wrong with all you people? Like, this is what you're so afraid of? And you have that response because you've built it up in your own head as being something that's not good for you, that has no purpose, that is absolutely going to destroy your life. And all of a sudden you realize it's nothing like that at all. It's not the experience you've been thinking about at all. And most of what you've been thinking has been drilled into you by the combined stigma of other people. And so, yeah, it's a natural response to just go like, what the fuck? And not actually give a shit about what people think of that, because you've given a shit for so long.
Especially with something like microdosing, you don't experience. So what I've done so far, I had something else I was going to say about that. Oh, with the being a different person, like experience, they're afraid they're going to be a different person. And in one of the main things I realized was it sort of like, it doesn't add to you, like add extra stuff. It more so strips things away and strips away the baggage, past trauma, whatever. So you're actually able to see things and there's no difference. I didn't even take enough to hallucinate yet, but I didn't notice, there wasn't anything more that was there. I just noticed more because there wasn't so much fog taking away from the present and what I was aware of. So I was just aware of so much more, and everything was just like so much more bright and beautiful. And I was walking around, I just walked around New York City for like 3 hours on it. And it was, it's one of my favorite things to do just ever in life. And doing it on some mushrooms was absolutely incredible.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like I was saying to you, it cuts your strings.
Yeah.
Sorry, real quick, say that was actually a decent way for my first time trying them, because it was just, I was just talking about my experience, but like that, I would use that way of explaining it today. And it was, yeah, so kind of funny.
It's like, yeah. I know I'm usually thinking something. What is it I'm usually thinking? And it's just not there.
And yeah, even since then, so I took, on Friday, I got up to 600 milligrams. I didn't take it all at once, so it probably had, you know, less of a super intense effect, but it was still like, it wasn't really much different than I've been feeling the last few months. It was just more intense, just less internal noise, more external awareness. And then Saturday morning, I was like, you know, let's ramp this up a little bit. So I took 1.4 grams and then an hour and a half later, 90 minutes later, took the 0.4. grams, is I think you call it the kicker. And that was awesome. There was like a few seconds I remember on the come up that I started to feel a little bit like, I think probably losing that control. And I just like immediately was like, it's okay to feel this. And it passed for me very quickly. I think that could be a point where someone like starts to you know, resist what they're feeling and lead to like, you know, bad trip maybe. And then, yeah. And then I just walked around New York and it was awesome. And then Sunday I didn't take anything, but I still, I texted you, I was walking around and I'm like, honestly, I still kind of feel like I'm on shrooms a little bit. Like I'm aware of so much more and like, I'm not. And then, this morning, cause I was talking to a few people close to me about potentially microdosing. So I wanted to get that a shot. So I took just 200, this morning, just to like see what that was like. And it was pretty much like how I felt Sunday, just like maybe a little tiny bit stronger, but it's just, there's no like crazy trippy drug feeling at all. It's just, you're more present, you're more aware, your mind quiets, you're less self-conscious. It's like all these amazing things and like no down, there's no come down. There's no like anything uncomfortability whatsoever. So yeah, that's basically my experience in a nutshell. I had a
see, and I find that that really funny because a lot of that was just how overall in control you felt most of the time, right? So all of a sudden the cessation of control, you're like, this is nice. Oh, I like this. And then all of a sudden, as that starts to deepen over time, you're just like, fuck, that's why I wanted that control. Right. And it becomes a much deeper, more trippy experience, as it were, because your depth has increased. And so it was really interesting to hear you having the experience that you should be having, frankly, on mushrooms, and the reason that it's so useful to people who are really caught up in their shit. Right. But it's just, it's like we said before, you start to relax and then you think that just because you've relaxed a little bit that you are relaxed, not taking into account that there's a whole wide spectrum of relaxation that you haven't even begun to explore.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point I was like, oh, this is, I am chilling. I'm about to ride this for the rest of my life. And that, that assumption with taking the mushrooms too, and, or wasn't that, it was the I appreciate just how much I was like willing to dive in, and like, yeah, it's like Friday and I was like, Saturday, Sunday, so kind of feel it. Monday, let's yeah, and that was very much my, that fall, like the beginning of Duelist Uni, I was just like, any chance I got, I wanted to basically try every variation of like every dose. And it wasn't until, I remember, it wasn't until like January, this is what, October, until January, that I think I took 5 grams and I was like, all right, I think I'm good, good for a bit. And that was like the point where I was like, I'm not gonna, and I don't think I took them for another month or two, but until then, I was taking them all the time, all the time.
A ton of thoughts that I just like questioning everything. I was like at a stoplight and it was a stop, but there were no cars coming. And I was like, I can just go. Like, that's made up. That's just completely made up. Just to make, it's literally just to make things easier for people to function. Like, it would be kind of a pain if there were cars driving, there was nothing stopping, and you'd just be kind of like going, shooting it, and like
trying to make it. That's an interesting point, because what would be the alternative? Everybody would have to be considerate and aware, right? And so our society is a structure of crutches to stop us from having to be considerate and aware all the time. We just make rules so we don't have to. It's like, no, there are laws telling you not to do that. Whether you recognize not to do that or not is irrelevant. It's like, no, but that's how a society crumbles. Right? It's like, I'm not going to do that because it's against the law, as opposed to, I'm not going to do that because it might cause someone harm. Uh-huh. Or because, you know, I don't really need to do it. It's just an egotistical want that I'm doing anyway. We always focus on the structure taking responsibility for the participants. And that's why we end up with an irresponsible society.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I did not think of that side.
I love, and I can almost feel like your sensitivity to things where you were like, all right, I think we can push a tiny bit more, because that just blew my mind right there. I was like, holy fuck, that's a whole, and that's like a whole other fucking depth to that. Like, our whole society is made out of allow us to be less considerate and aware. And I was like, ah, but I could almost feel you being like, all right, we can give a little bit more of a nudge here. And I had no idea that was kind of going on, but now seeing it from, you know, a couple years later, it's like, oh yeah, I get a little more of a feel for that.
Well, and it's funny because now you're looking at your past self, and if you were in the position I was in with what you know now, how you would interact with your past self would be different, right? You'd be like, okay, well, maybe we can push you a little bit here, or maybe we should question that, right? And it's just because you would recognize the process as it's happening, right? It's not about getting them to a point. It's about just the slowly relaxation, the slow relaxation of all of those assumptions, right? And again, the awakening of responsibility. So it's fun.
It makes so much sense. And it's almost like, you know, it breeds this society of like robotic type people wanting more, needing more, and unaware and not needing to be.
That's right.
So that's aware.
Right. That's yeah. right. And better yet, here, well, we've got technology. We'll make it so you can be as comfortable as possible while you're not aware.
Yeah. Like, what movie is it? Wall-E? Is that when they show all the people like so sitting good. In there, sitting back here with their massive like Coca-Cola and fast food and just like TV in front of them, and they're just like basically zombies. And it's like that is peak comfort. Yep. You know, it's like there's nothing you ever, no discomfort whatsoever, and it creates this the most. I don't know. I
feel like too, you can almost tell like I'm a little more willing to be expressive in this one than episode one. Also, like even I noticed like the leaning back doing the Wall-E impersonation. Like, I don't know, in episode one, I may not have gone that route. And I also love just how much Wall-E, Idiocracy, all those things are very showing the extent of that false comfort, false certainty, and the seeming desire for comfort that comes with it.
We really should do a movie review of Wall-E.
I want to use uncomfortable. That seems extremely uncomfortable to me. So it's like, is ultimate comfort in theory sounds amazing, but in reality, that sounds
not so much. Because it's horrible. An insidious kind of consequence, right? It settles in over time. And by the time you've realized there's a consequence, you're almost too far along to do anything about it, right? Like that's often the problem with addiction to certain substances, is that when you don't deal with why you're addicted to, when you don't deal with the unhappiness or the lack that the addiction is stemming from, that you're trying to escape, then even if you were to kick that addiction, even if you were to quit drinking, you may find yourself in another addiction, such as, you know, focusing on buying things all the time or focusing on judging other people. These are all addictions. These are all ways of dealing with our own sense of lack. These are all ways out of responsibility for our current state of mind. So long as we can put it on something else, so long as we can either pass the buck or blame someone, then that's what we tend to do, because we have no guidance telling us not to, right? Like for the most part, we're just raised as like, just pass the test and get the job and then you'll get what you want. And that's the end all and be all of everything. And it's like, well, hold on. What about me as a person as I'm going through that? Like, here I am thinking, I'm never going to pass this test. It's going to be the end of my life. And nobody's coming along and saying, actually, that response is merely because you're looking at this in a certain way and you're looking at yourself in a certain way. Nothing's that serious. We don't get any self-knowledge. It's always just about going through the motions. And that is not something that encourages awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when it comes to society, it was something that I have been questioning for a while, even like a couple years to a degree, more intensely the last few months. And then, you know, doing some psychedelics just blows that out of the water. Like, what the fuck is society? It's like, it's all made up. It's literally all made up. And yet people, you know, they think it's like, okay. And they justify it because it's like, oh, well, it wouldn't be able to function without it. And it's like, well, maybe it would. And I like,
we did
the idea with, yeah, it's like, it doesn't make any sense to me why mushrooms are illegal, but at the same time, it makes a ton of sense given the state of how things are right now and the need for people to want more. That's how, you know, everything keeps on churning. And it's like, so it makes perfect sense why they're illegal, because if everyone stopped, but it's not like from a harmful sense, it's from the machine needs to keep on running, and this might stop that machine and start a new one. if we dropped a little bit in the water or something.
And that's the point, right?
I'm starting to realize why you've referred to like season one as the gauntlet, or like once people get through, you know, first 5-6 episodes, I'm like, holy fuck, we're just like fucking dropping our dicks on the table here. It's like, let's dig into everything so quick and like within a couple episodes. So it makes sense why, because we can see our metrics and stuff, like episode 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's like after those there's like a drop, but then it's like where someone gets uncomfortable with something, and then if they make it through those like first, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 episodes, certainly through season one, usually it's someone wants to keep listening, but a lot of people drop off after episode 1, 2, 3, and I'm starting to get a sense for why.
yeah it's good that way. Under these substances, yeah. You suddenly gain a sense of clarity and you start going, Whoa, wait a minute. And you start looking around and you realize again that all the patterns you've been going through are patterns, and that they become familiar, and that it's all you've been taught. And so it's all you know. And you start to think outside the box. And that's very much why those are illegal. That's exactly it. I wanted to cover this quickly because I did have somebody comment recently that, do I believe psychedelics are necessary to waking up? And I just wanted to comment on this quickly because the experience that you had is common when people do experience or when they experiment with psychedelics, particularly psilocybin mushrooms. They tend to have a profound experience. They have an insight, but in that they tend to pass the insight off to the substance. Oh, I was just tripping, or oh, it was just the drugs, and they fail to remember. No, it was you doing the work within that. It just, again, changed the conscious environment. I like to look at it as, you know, if you were to imagine your ego or all the thoughts you tell yourself about yourself and the world, each one being a layer or a weight, we're always having all these weights piled on top of ourselves. Well, all of a sudden, when you're on psychedelics or when you're in an extremely clear mind, it's like those weights become feathers. All of a sudden, your perception of the weight just changes entirely, and you stand up like it was never a thing, because the weight was all dependent on how much commitment you put into it. And so psychedelics can show you the door to that, but they can't teach you to do it. You have to do it yourself. You actually have to have the will to do it, because if you don't, even in psychedelics, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a profound trip. You could just sit there giggling.
Yeah, certainly. And I was thinking, yeah, that the layers analogy, I think it was perfect. I was thinking of it like a sort of like a fog too. Like if you're here, like you're my fist, and there's this fog around you, and as you grow up, it gets thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker, and then doing something. And like, I started to have a lot of the things, you know, we connected before I did psychedelics for the first time this past weekend. Like if you watch all my videos, like I was talking about the same stuff before it. It's just, it's more of an outside the box. And I think when it comes to, you know, the layers or the fog, like as you get older, the fog just gets thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker until you are so concrete in your beliefs, you don't even know there's a fog, and it's so thick that you can't change. You're not going to change anything. And all this does is clear that. Yep. It just clears it. You're still the same. Nothing changes whatsoever about you. All it does is strips it away, clears away the fog, and it allows you, instead of the energy that you have or the awareness or whatever getting sucked into the fog, so maybe you only have like 10% energy or awareness, all of a sudden you have like 50% or 90% or whatever, and then you're able to have these insights. And it sort of takes away, like if the fog could be related to, you know, being self-conscious, mm-hmm. too, and like just being so aware of your separation, and it almost like takes that down a notch, so you don't feel so separate either. And you feel, and I've started feeling very connected like a few months ago, but like this was just, yeah, just a more intense level. And it really wasn't that much different than I was feeling before. It was like very similar, but if I was, you know, like 20%, it just pushed me to like 30 or 40%, something like that, as opposed to being like a totally like parallel experience or whatever, some other experience. It was the same thing I've been feeling, just more intensely.
Well, and there's a lot of research that's going into it right now. There's a research lab here in the town that I live in the city that I live in, that's doing research into psilocybin mushrooms and their potential use in treating depression, anxiety, substance abuse. I mean, Dr. Gaber Mady was doing research in using ayahuasca to treat heroin addicts. And I think there was like an 80 to an 85% success rate in dropping heroin addiction through a psilocybin experience or through an ayahuasca experience, because your default mode, the thoughts that you're used to thinking, get completely reset in a psychedelic experience. And so you come out of it and it's like you have a new lease on life. It's like you've dropped your load behind you somewhere and you're like, yes, I'm good to go. And habitually you will start to pick up that load again, which is why a lot of times when people do have their first awakening on psychedelics, they get an ego out of it. They have a moment of awakening and they're like, yes, I've seen the universe. And then they come out of it and all of their old patterns of identification and comparison come back in without them noticing it. So now they're like a master of the universe, but compared to everyone else, right? So it just kind of, it seeps in over time. So it's not, again, it's not the psychedelics that'll do it for you, but psychedelics will definitely give you that leg up if you are entrenched in vines, if you are, you know, ensnared in habitual patterns and thoughts and identity, and you know, especially the older you get, this is where they're really seeing the benefits of microdosing and alternatives to traditional pharmaceuticals, because there is a lot to be said for altered states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. And I have, you know, the way you're describing this with, like, you know, caught in the vines or a lot of fog or a lot of layers, like, I have some people, I'm not going to obviously name any names or anything, but some people close to me who could really, I think, really, really benefit. And some of them have, you know, commented, been like, you know, I'd prefer if you didn't share things online, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, share things, hold on. I'm about to try and convince you to do these. You're trying to tell me, like, not to be careful, whatever, like, give me a couple months, you're going to be doing them too.
Absolutely.
And it's just, yeah, because I've seen people.
Can confirm that did end up playing out with a number of people. And yeah, conversations certainly shifted.
That's awesome. And again, it's part of that process you're going through where you're just like, Jesus Christ, I cannot believe I just didn't know about this experience. But you're also questioning everything else, and so you're feeling more and more free, and you just want to share that with people, right? There's nothing wrong with it. It's just that you don't immediately understand how afraid people are, because you don't necessarily understand how afraid you were either, now that you're feeling so free, right? And so that all comes with time.
Who go through and they go through the paths of, like, you know, the professional experience, like antidepressant related things. And it's like, I don't know, it seems like, I don't know, from the research I've done and all the stuff I've been watching, especially the last few weeks, like, it seems like that's more of a band-aid. It sort of suppresses the emotions to a degree, as opposed to doing anything, you know, at the root.
Yeah. Well, and from my experience, and I'll say straight up, I'm not a medical professional. This is not medical advice. Don't listen to me. This is just my own experience. When I was in the thick of my own personal hell, I was on antidepressants and antipsychotics, and I was heavily medicated for years. And all it did was allow me to continue going through my day-to-day life, but being more numb. Like, I wasn't getting the ups and downs as much, and the peaks weren't there. But on the other hand, I didn't feel anything. Like, people would express something to me and I would say the appropriate response, knowing it was the appropriate response, but never feeling it in myself. Like, somebody, when I was on antidepressants, a friend of mine had committed suicide, and I was consoling his girlfriend at the time. I'm like, I'm sorry, you know, we're all going to miss him. And, you know, it's a terrible thing. I didn't feel a thing. And when I left her company that day, I felt like a bag of shit, because I could recognize in myself, I wasn't feeling any of it. It was all lip service. It was all a show. And while I wasn't getting depressed and I wasn't, you know, in self-loathing, it would almost be preferable. It's like the difference between feeling and being numb, right? In general, it's like, yeah, when you're feeling, you can get hurt, but you can also feel joy, right? Yeah. Where it, when you're numb, you're not in danger, but there's nothing to live for. And so in for me, after going up and down on that loop forever, I finally just took my medication and threw it in the dumpster behind my apartment and walked away. And that was rough. That was one of the roughest experiences I've ever been through, because the next 6 months was all of my old habits coming back full force because I had been avoiding them. And so they were almost worse. It was like a screaming demon horde had just come to my door and said, hey, forget about us. And I had to deal with it because I had been just muffling them.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Yeah.
And I feel like that's really symbolic of just like relaxing a little bit more. Like, we forget how, like, that the act of going from antidepressants to not is like a variation of relaxing, whereas like being tense, feeling like you're sure, variation of relaxing, and just like being willing to let go of your false certainty so much is reflective of that. But as you relax, you're left with everything that's going on. And so it's starting to make sense more and more to me, like, why people aren't relaxed, because you're allowed to, you know, it allows you to avoid things and like not look at certain stuff. So like, as you relax, it doesn't mean it's going to be comfortable, but as you face that stuff, then, you know, the relaxation continues as you go. But it's all just seeing more and more of why you're not relaxed, which I definitely wasn't realizing here. It's just like, yeah, being a little bit more relaxed, but that's component of it right there.
Yeah, it's tricky though, because, you know, we've always learned, what's that? There's the consequence. You're feeling stressed, you should tense up. What's that? You're feeling stressed, you should tense up. You know, it never dawns on us to let go. And so it takes quite a bit in terms of small insights for that insight to really start to form and for you to understand what relax even means.
Curious. So a thought came up when you were explaining and like talking about consoling your friend's girlfriend after that happened. And I meant to ask you this, I think last time, because you say, you know, you don't fear death whatsoever. The death of Ray does not concern you at all. What about others? You know, if that situation were to happen again, yeah, or others, is there other, you know, but if that were to happen again, like, would you feel now?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And I know that because last year, my cat of 18 years passed on. And 2 years before that, my other cat of 18 years passed on. And the year before that, my dog of 12 years passed on. So in those, you know, 4 years, and I think there was a year break in between, it was just one thing after another, one loss after another. And so each and every time I had to come back to, okay, you know, put your money where your mouth is, kind of thing. Like, you know, we're talking about death. And of course, being raised Christian, I had all kinds of habitual perspectives of death that were still coming up. And so it really gave me the opportunity to look at it straight in the face. And I made a TikTok about this last year as I was going through it, and then about a week after. And grieving is such an interesting process, because it really is just the process of accepting what is. And grieving is almost like, we would prefer to focus on hurting ourselves. We would prefer to focus on regret. We would prefer to focus on the loss and how that feels, than to accept that this is now the way things are, that these people are gone, regardless of how we might want them to be here. And so it was turning that loss into, again, it was looking at the whole that was created in my life and the beautiful way that that whole had been formed to begin with. And so it's, again, it's just looking past the character that we were attached to, realizing that the person that we were attached to, the person that we loved, was never really the person that we loved. They were the awareness that was shining through that person's experiences, through their opinions, through their little habits and whatever they picked up along the way. But it was their inner awareness that was shining through, their soul, as people would call it. And that's what we loved, because when we look at the people we love, we can see that they have their own heartache. We can see that they have their own shit that they're facing. We can see that they've had their own journey and things that they'd prefer not to go through. So looking through all that, we see who they are, and that's who we love. And so once they've passed on, remembering they weren't the character means that they're in everybody else. They're always here. They're us. We're literally continuing on as them. And they have changed us in every moment they've been with us. There's literally no division between them and us. So we are continuing on as them. We have been changed as a result, and we will continue to change because there's no division. As you said, if we stopped identifying, we'd all be one.
Certainly. Yeah. The way you,
which was a very long way of saying, yes, I feel things when people die.
Said that in the sense of, like, instead of it thinking of it as like a negative, a loss, whatever, think of it, you know, it's positive, like the opportunity and all of that. And I thought, like, our family dog passed away 3 years ago, and she was 14 at the time. So, like, you know, you can't really get much more as a dog. And that was sort of like where my head was at with it. It was like, what is, like, it is very sad. We all, like, she had to be put down. She got very sick. Like, she was pretty sick for a few months, but then, like, happened pretty quickly. And we sort of realized she started throwing up a bunch. And we were like, she's suffering quite a bit. So it was very sad that day and the following days. But it was like, after that, I was like, what's the alternative here? The alternative is she could have gotten picked up by a family that didn't love her as much as we did, by an abusive family, by anything. Like, she got the best life she probably could have. And what more? What do I want her to live to be, like, 25? Like, you just, that's not how long dogs live for. Well, so
who's it about at that point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, she began to get sick and she passed on. And, you know, so it was like, what's the alternative there? Or, you know, I really, it's always sad. Like, I have one grandparent left, and I'll be extremely, extremely sad when she passes away. But especially when it's like older people, or if I hear of someone else's grandparent who's like 98, and they're like, I'm like, that's, of course it's sad, but it's like, what more could you, what are you going to try to live to 120? Like,
right.
You just can't, it's not really at all tragic, because it's like, that's the way it is. That's how long humans live for, pretty much. That's about the max.
All things, right? All things. But we get so caught up in the division.
And I find it kind of interesting, like, that statement, because I think maybe it was this one or a different episode, just saying, like, it's weird, like, it's just the way it is, you know, it's the way it is, and how often you hear that. But then things that are actually just the way it is, like someone living to be 98, it's like we fight that, but then we reinforce the thing that could possibly change, and we fight the thing that is less likely to change. So I find that interesting, like, that recognition of, like, reality is the way it is versus this made up fucking world that we've created in our heads. It's just the way it is. Yeah, it's always been like this, and it can't change at all. And just like the difference in that, and the willingness to, yeah, just look at things for how they are. And yeah, it comes back to, you know, awareness and responsibility and that back and forth.
Because our culture is very much egocentric. Like, we're so focused on the individual perspective that we're all individuals, and our awareness comes from this meaty bit that's inside our skull, that the idea of death is terrifying because of that. And I mean, the rise of Christianity didn't help with that at all, because right, with the afterlife and then that whole thing, and, you know, we're all individual souls and God's going to judge you. And so we made death into this really weird thing. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't die any more than the tree dies when a leaf falls off. Right? Like, that's the whole thing. The leaf goes to the ground, the ground absorbs the leaf, the ground feeds the roots, and the tree continues to grow. And so everything is cyclical. And in this story, in this lifetime, I'm going to make an impact on whoever it is I talk to, and they're going to continue to do the same. And so me holding on to the idea that I'm this body, that's on me. If I'm going to hold on to that, I'm going to experience the fear that goes with that. If I'm going to hold on to that, I'm going to experience, you know, the tension that goes with letting that go. And I'm going to reinforce to everybody how important I am, like, protect me, right? But that's a big part of it, is because we don't recognize that we aren't separate, that death is so goddamn scary.
Yeah. So with So with something like, you know, disease and whatnot, what I'm curious your take on disease and like the level to which we should try to go to stop it, if it is all happenings. And if we were, you know, I'm starting more and more to think of us just like equivalent to nature. And this weekend when I was walking around, I was seeing people were no different than trees, were no different than the water. Like I wasn't, and I think I texted you this, I wasn't looking at like the 5-6 feet height. I was looking a little bit higher and like from a pulled back view a little bit. So it was like, I was seeing humans as nature, not as individual stories. And it was like, all of these things were happening and I was aware of them, but the trees and the humans were not different, and seeing things as, and seeing us as nature, not separate from it. And I think, you know, Christianity has done a really good job of
absolutely creating
that sort of feeling of separation. So when it comes, so back to my question, I guess, when it comes to something like disease, like to what level do we go to try to prevent it or stop it?
I love the fact that you don't fuck around. You're like, it's episode 2. Should we be letting people die?
Like, I'm getting more and more of an appreciation for why people drop off quick with the podcast. Because it's like, yeah, fuck it. We're running. We're going. What about this? Should people be protected? Because like, from a perspective, of course, it's like, you know, like it doesn't make sense to prolong this stuff. It's more control, but I fucking love how we dig into this so quick.
That's a good question. And ultimately it's going to be dependent on the person, because see, it's not as with everything, it's not a decision we can make for others. Right. And so we have to address the common mentality. We have to address the collective mentality, which is the collective mentality regarding death. But most of our medical science, or most of our policies regarding death, are the result of how we individually view death. And so the more people who are terrified of death because they see themselves as an individual body, they're going to invest in ways to keep that body alive. They're going to invest in structures that have the same mentality. And that's what's grown over time. And so now, even if you're 98 years old, you've lived a good life, everything's failing, we're still going to put you on life support to try and keep you alive as long as possible because you're afraid. And I think that if we were less afraid, if we had a different common mentality, if we had a different collective conversation about this, that people would start to say, you know what, I'm 65 years old, rather than getting that quadruple bypass for the or heart surgery for the third time, I'm just going to let this incarnation go and continue on as my grandkids. And
that right there is another reason that people usually don't get through the first couple of episodes. Cause while you're asking, like, should we let people die? My response was no, they should do it voluntarily.
We would have that clarity if our collective discussion was different and it went on for long enough. But as of right now, we're still so overcommitted to the idea of individuality that we can't have this conversation. Like, you can't go to somebody and say, you know, when you die, it's not really going to be that bad. They're going to say, well, you know, you have no idea how much I've saved. You have no idea how much I've invested in this life. And to them, it's important. And until they change that commitment to that importance, this conversation won't change. We'll just continue going towards, you know, bionic people, because that's exactly the direction that we're going in right now. It's like, you know, what can we replace with something we can make and continue to replace so you can live forever? And it's like, but why would you want to? It is the big question. Alan Watts talked about this too. It's like, you know, when we were about 100 years ago or more, human lifespan was like 30 to 60 years, maybe, right? But in those 30 to 60 years, you lived, right? You actually went out and faced stuff, and you had discomfort, and you had a personal journey, and you had all of this stuff. And so your life was vibrant. It wasn't just get up, go to work, come home, watch TV, go to sleep, get up, go to work, and continue on. It was very different. There was more involved with it. And so quality of life and length of life are two different conversations.
Yeah, more the life in your years than the years in your life sort of thing. Yep. There, right? Yeah. Yeah, I think we're, yeah, extremely far from any sort of discussion like that. And
I wonder, you know, and I do, because So it seems to me, and this is just from me being old and watching this perspective for a while, that this conversation is becoming easier to have with more people. And it's not that the conversation is necessarily just becoming easier to have. It's not just easier to go, hey, let's talk about what Alan Watts said 50 years ago, or hey, let's talk about Krishnamurti, or hey, let's talk about Buddha. It's people your age who are coming up with entirely new ways to look at old insights, people who are coming up with different ways to have this discussion, and they're having insights that are distilling old conversations down to new ones, very much like what we're doing here, right? We're talking about old insights, we're talking about religion, we're talking about psychedelics, we're talking about all this, but we're putting it into a way that's relevant to our current time period. We're putting it into ways that are relevant to our current way of life. And that is happening a lot. And so I think to some degree, it's exponential growth. I think that as these conversations continue to get more and more on point, they get less and less fluffy, I guess is what I'm really trying to say. Because fluff scares away your serious seekers, right? It draws in more people. It draws in more people. The more interested you are in this, not to feel better, but because it's like, wow, this is crazy cool. You guys have to listen to this. The more people start to go, okay, what are you talking about? And they start to listen, and then they get interested. And I think enthusiasm is the big key here. Enthusiasm is infectious. If we can get people enthusiastic about the conversation the same way we are, which is just about being enthusiastic, it's not about trying to get them anywhere, then it's going to spread like wildfire, and it's going to spread faster and faster and faster. So I don't know how far this change.
And I think that's something that I definitely discounted was I was thinking, you know, we're doing this because we're talking about stuff. I think I discounted how much my enthusiasm was maybe something you noticed more than, because I was like, I'm coming to these insights, I'm figuring stuff out, but it was more so the way that I was doing things than the things that I was doing. And that's been, and it's interesting to see that play out then, because it's not about the words at all. Like I thought for a long time, first lot of episodes of the podcast, a lot of seasons of the podcast, that it was about the conversation. And this, even just right here, it's like recognizing, oh, it's not even, it's just people being a little bit more relaxed and enthusiastic about fucking living life. And then, yeah, of course you come to, you know, certain conversations like this because you're more willing, because it doesn't make so much sense to be so tense and rigid.
Hey, if it helps, in the same way, I was learning the same lesson. Like as much as I had realized it's about who you are as a person, I was still very much trying to use the right words. I was still trying very much to find a way to express it rather than to be it being expressed.
Changes. I don't know how far in the future this is. It could be next year. That's the wonderful thing about uncertainty, right? The world could change overnight.
Certainly. I think with a lot of these things too, because I know you get a lot of backlash with your stances on religions, and everyone's like, just let me believe what I believe and blah, blah. And it's like, or like, you know, not having a belief is a belief and stuff like that. And I get that a lot too. And it's like, I'm not saying, like, I'm pretty much at a point that I don't believe anything. Yeah. Like, and that's not a belief. Like, yeah, like it's interesting that everyone wants to, like, it's because of the way everything is, we want to categorize everything in that way. Like there's so many religions out there that were just created that, like, oh, if you think this way or do this, it's like because of this religion. It's like, no, religion is not necessary, and it's all made up. Like it's all fucking made up, and no one, like, it's not the truth. And people, like, it's like kind of frustrating, but at the same time, like, it is what it is. And it's, everyone's just so caught up in what do you believe in? Like, well, I don't believe in anything. I don't believe, like, do I have to? Like, whoever said that?
But that makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
that's what it is. You know, and I get the same responses, and it's funny because.
And I think that, like, even just that, the willingness to say, like, I don't believe anything, even just in the last 2 years overall, I've noticed has been easier to say. Like, just that statement, it's just such a basic thing, and it's no longer being pinned as like, oh, no belief is a belief. It's like, huh, yeah, no, a lot of this shit is pretty fucking absurd to believe in.
Because that's the work. That's the work. Because having the insight is one thing, and then going out into the world and seeing everybody else who doesn't want to see that insight, that's the work. It's like the old expression, if you think you're enlightened, go talk to your parents. Mm-hmm. Right? Because they'll push all your buttons. And so when you go out into the world and you're like, I don't believe anything, and somebody's like, well, that's a belief, you have to churn through that. You're like, okay, hold on, is it? And if you're honest about it, you will actually take the moment to go, is it? And you'll look, because that's part of the process of growing, right? Instead of, no, it's not. Rah. And so that's the work, is looking at what your reaction is. And so after enough time, now my response when I'm like, you know, I don't believe anything, and they're like, well, that's a belief. And then my only response is, I'm sure it would be uncomfortable for you to see it otherwise. Yeah. Because the alternative is that you'd have to accept there's another way of living. Mm-hmm. And that's often what people don't want to hear. They don't want to even entertain the idea that what you're saying is possible, that you can live without constant self-analysis, that you can live without fear of death, that you can live without belief in a fiction, because that's what they hold on to keep them safe and secure in a world of uncertainty. That's what they hold on to establish their sense of value through comparison and assumption. There is so much invested in that game of pretend, that you even going over and saying, you know, we don't have to play pretend, is a threat.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get to a point that we don't have to play so much pretend, because it's wild. And there's so many, like, when people will say like, oh, not believing in something is a belief, and I'm like, or like, how do you know anything you say is right? And I'm like, well, I don't. But it's not that I think anything I think is right. It's like, at our baseline right now in society, there are like hundreds of beliefs and assumptions and all of these things that people are tied to. All I'm saying, and it seems like all you're saying, is like, let's strip some of those down a little bit. It's not about adding anything to that. It's about peeling them back, like clearing out the fog. It's that's it. It's not addition of anything. It's just subtraction, because we're at a baseline by the time you're 20 that you have probably hundreds of thousands of beliefs and assumptions about everything. And all I'm saying is, take some time to question it. Ask some questions. Just figure out why do you believe that?
Let's stop settling on an answer.
There you go.
Right?
That's perfect. I think we're going to wrap this up right around here, because that's really the crux of all of this, isn't it? Just keep questioning. Stop settling on an answer. And what you've got and what remains is the ongoing process of intelligence, where you are growing and you are gaining sensitivity and awareness and the ability to empathize and all of that. Or you can settle on an answer, dig yourself in as though you're preparing for a siege, and protect that answer and hold on to it and just live your life in conflict. That's all this is about. And I love the fact that we were talking about how this conversation is expanding over time, and it's 2 years later now, and the community is almost 20,000 strong. We've had 8 retreats so far. We're going into our 9th in February. There's just been so much growth. The Discord is thriving. People are here in the comments section. Like, the conversation is growing. And it's not because we're trying to make the conversation grow, but because we're part of it growing.
Yeah, well said. These are so cool to go back to, and I discount. They're good for me too, to like have to watch, because like I can be judgmental of myself, especially of like way back, you know, things. And it's kind of arrogant in a sense, because there's things I'm saying here that like I'm resonating with now, and I'm hearing like, that's a good point. I could revisit that one right there. And the thought, despite being a lot more relaxed, my life, there's still, you know, there's fucking cycles of things. And even with like, I notice I'm not like, I don't know if I even have a notebook in front of me in these. And like, it's going to be interesting to see like the progression of it and how reflective that's probably going to be of me thinking that it, it is something versus, you know, just being an expression of myself where I'm at. Cause like now I don't. And a couple months ago, I realized how much I started using that as a crutch and I stopped and it was really fucking uncomfortable to stop. And I almost don't like, I'll jot a couple things down here and there, but like hardly at all. Whereas there were points where my page would be full from like 1 hour of things. And it's funny seeing that I'm not doing that here at all. And I remember like not having expectations of myself at all going into these things and how much that began to build over time. And more recently, like there's still like, I feel like I have more expectations of myself now in certain ways, but then being more relaxed also, and like, just the variations. But it's kind of funny seeing like, despite maybe being more tense, like I wasn't expecting myself. I was just, I knew that I was showing up and it was just going to be wherever I was at, however it was. And like, I didn't mind taking a pause and scratching my head and being like, that's an interesting point. And then saying something, you know, instead of like always having to have something right there. So that's just kind of funny to see too.
Well, and I like the fact that you expressed very clearly the reason that I wanted to do this show with you at all. You're enthusiastic. You loved the conversation. You find this shit interesting. That was the point. It's not that you were trying to be more. It's that you genuinely felt the joy of just picking this shit apart and growing as a person. That's all you really need, is that intention to be willing to grow, to be willing to question. And if you can feel the enthusiasm of that, that will drive you into the unknown far more than fear ever drove you out of the unknown. This has been a lot of fun, man. Thank you everyone for joining us. We really appreciate it. We're going to record another episode in the very near future, and we will see you soon.
Bye, everyone.